Good afternoon. Welcome to the House Education Finance Committee. Committee will come to order. Today we have the Office of Legislative Auditor to present their recent evaluations, reports, and an internal control and audit of the Perpich Center for the Arts. And so we have Mr. Joel Alter with the Office of Legislative Auditor and Cecile Ferkel. And Jody Rodriguez, is Jody presenting or just here as a resource? Very well. So before we get to that, let's see, Representative Sandstead, if you had a chance to take a quick look at the minutes from yesterday. And if so, would you like to move adoption of those minutes?
Madam Chair, I'll move them for adoption.
Very good. Representative Sandstead moves adoption approval of the minutes from January 25th. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you very much, Representative Sandstead. All right. And so, Mr. Alter and Ms. Ferkel, welcome to the committee. And if you please just state your names for the record so we have that on the tape, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joel Alter. I'm with the Program Evaluation Division of the Legislative Auditor's Office. Last week, our office released two reports at the same time on the Perpich Center for Arts Education, which is a state agency that was created in 1985. I believe you have both reports in your packet, and to help avoid confusion, I'm going to be talking first about the evaluation report, which is the one with the somewhat darker blue cover. And the financial audit, which we released, has a somewhat lighter blue cover. So in case there are any questions that come up where we need to reference the report, I think you have both reports in your packet. I wish that I had better news to give you with these reports. I'll be starting today by talking about the key findings and recommendations in our evaluation. And in that report, we found significant problems related to agency leadership, oversight, and management. We also found operational issues with the two schools that are operated by the Perpich Center, particularly Crosswinds Arts and Science School. After I talk a little bit about our evaluation, Ms. Ferkel from our Financial Audit Division is going to say a few words about our financial audit findings, specifically that we found inadequate controls and weak financial management at the Perpich Center. I should mention, too, before we start, that earlier this month, the executive director of the Perpich Center retired, and as I'll mention shortly, there has been a lot of turnover in recent months on the Perpich Center board, the board of directors. But I also want to say that the findings in our report don't simply disappear with the change in personnel, whether it's on the board or at the agency. Those issues, problems, remain to be addressed by the current board, by the new executive director, who has yet to be determined, and by you, the legislature. Let me turn to our audit evaluation findings, and again, I want to acknowledge Jody Munson Rodriguez, who helped me with the evaluation part of this review. Overall, what did we conclude in the evaluation? Well, our report says that the Perpich Center's governing board has not provided the agency with enough direction and oversight, and the board has not been sufficiently transparent and accessible to the public in its activities. Our report says there have been widespread employee concerns about the agency's administrative leadership, and that has contributed to a morale issue at the agency. We're going to be talking in a moment about the two schools the Perpich Center operates, but we concluded that one of those schools, called Crosswinds, has struggled during its time under Perpich Center management. And we found that the agency has fulfilled some, but not all, of the requirements in statute for the agency to provide statewide outreach to schools around the state related to arts education. And before we get into the findings, I'd like to review a little bit of background about the Perpich Center, beginning with an overview of its main areas of responsibility. First, the agency provides statewide outreach to support arts education in schools throughout Minnesota. The Perpich Center started providing this kind of assistance immediately after the agency was created in 1985. And in fact, I think it's fair to say that this commitment by the agency to do statewide outreach was a critical factor in getting legislative support to create this agency. A second area of responsibility is the Arts High School in Golden Valley. And this school was another key component when the legislature created the agency in 1985. It took a few years to do the planning and the necessary steps to actually open the doors of the school and get students enrolled. A couple of unique things about the Arts High School: it has a competitive admissions process that's unlike public high schools anywhere else in Minnesota. Also, it has the ability to house students in a dormitory that's located on the school's Golden Valley campus. And this school has always been a two-year high school. It serves grades 11 and 12. And the third area of responsibility is much more recent. In 2014, the legislature gave the Purpitt Center official responsibility for an existing school, Crosswinds Arts and Science School, in Woodbury. Well before the Purpitt Center took over this school, the school was created to foster cultural, racial, and ethnic integration among students, and this school serves grades 6 through 10. Some people might ask, well, why do we have a state arts education agency? And one reason has been to provide additional options for students who can't find what they need in their local schools. As I said before, the Arts High School can enroll students from around Minnesota. The reach of Crosswinds is much more limited. This year, Crosswinds served mainly the East Twin Cities metro area and had students from 13 school districts. The agency also exists to help strengthen the arts programs in students' home districts. Not every school in Minnesota has the resources to offer classes in dance or theater or media arts. So the Purpitt Center can provide schools assistance, help them comply with state standards, broaden their course offerings, help them provide opportunities for professional development to teachers or even administrators. In recent years, the Purpitt Center has also tried to use the arts to promote not only the artistic development of students, but also to promote academic achievement. The majority of the Purpitt Center's funding has come from the state's general fund appropriations. That funding has been flat for many years, and that's shown in the yellow line on the chart that you see on the screen. The red line shows the agency's appropriations in $2,000, in other words, adjusted for inflation. And with that adjustment, it becomes clear that the agency has had to support its activities with fewer general fund dollars over time. When the agency took over management of Crosswinds, it did receive state general education aid for that school that is not reflected in that chart. But again, I think what you take away from this chart is that the agency has had diminishing funds in real dollars to support its original functions, statewide outreach and the Arts High School. The Purpitt Center is governed by a 15-member board. According to statute, this board has all of the agency's formal authority. Board members are appointed by the governor to four-year terms. State law does not require the appointees to the Purpitt Board to have any particular skills or experience, but the law does say that there must be at least one board member from each of Minnesota's eight congressional districts. I think it's also worth noting that of the current board members, and there are 14 right now, there's one yet to be named by the governor, but of the current 14 members, nine of them are new to the board in just the last 6 months. So the current board is, in some ways, a different board than the one that oversaw this agency in the last few years. Turning to our findings, I want to start by talking about the governing board because of its statutory responsibility to oversee the agency. And we found that the board was fairly inactive in recent years, and its oversight was weak. Although there are references in board policies to the agency's strategic plan and annual goals, the board hasn't adopted a plan or set goals for about 9 years. And I think that's important. Without having agreed-upon goals, agreement among the board members, but also agreement with the administrative leadership of the agency, without that, it's hard for the board to hold the agency accountable or to determine its progress. Board policy says that the board is supposed to annually review the executive director's performance, but in fact, the board has not done these reviews very frequently. And in our view, this has been a missed opportunity. In a few moments, I want to talk about some of the management issues that we'll be discussing, but I think had those reviews been done in a more timely manner, one that was consistent with board policy, perhaps some of those issues could have been addressed in a more timely manner. The agency runs two schools, and yet the board has played a very small role in their oversight. For example, the board has not reviewed school policies recently, and we know from our observation of the board's review of the school's budgets last year that that review was pretty superficial. The board has a policy that requires it to review Perfect Center budget proposals before they're submitted to the legislature. But I think if the board wants to put its stamp on the agency's budgets, it really should be reviewing budget proposals at an earlier stage before they're even submitted to the governor and MMB for possible inclusion in the governor's budget, and the board has not done this. And finally, we note that the board itself met less frequently in recent years, and the board's committees rarely met. And, you know, some of these things might be okay again if this were just an advisory board, which you sometimes see for executive branch agencies. But again, this is a governing board. That's how it's constituted in statute. It has the real authority for this agency. In addition, we found that the board hasn't solicited enough public input or been sufficiently transparent. For example, from the beginning of 2014 through September of 2016, there were 20 business meetings of the board during that period. On three of those occasions, the board offered an opportunity for public input. Another issue is that until recently, the board did not post its meeting minutes on its website. And that certainly made it harder for parents or for other stakeholders to monitor the board's actions. The board has a policy that there should be meeting minutes for all the meetings of its committees, but we found that in about 30% of the cases, there were not. In addition, until recently, the only way for the public to contact board members was an email link on the website of the agency that went to one of the agency's administrative staff. That's been addressed in the last couple of months when the board added ways for people to directly contact individual members. So, again, overall, even though the Perfect Center Board is not governed by the statutes that govern independent school districts or charter schools, I think it's important to remember, again, this is an agency that does oversee two schools, and so some of the expectations that we or others may have of this board are similar to those that we would have for boards of other types of schools. Aside from the board, we also found problems with the performance of Perfect administrative officials. In May 2016, we sent emails to each employee at the Perfect Center, including the schools. And we told them the general areas that we were examining. We invited them to provide us with observations, compliments, complaints, and suggestions about these topics. We heard overwhelmingly negative comments about Perfect management and the work environment at the agency. I mentioned that the person who had been the executive director for the past 7 years stepped down just within the last few weeks. And some might say, well, if she in fact was part of the problem, again, haven't those problems gone away? And I would say, no, it's going to take hard work going forward, both by the board, by whoever is appointed to be the new executive director. This is still an agency that needs direction. It needs cohesiveness, needs better communication, and it needs transparency in its practices, and those aren't going to just magically appear overnight. We're going to be hearing in a moment about the financial audit and what we found, but in brief, it's a report with a lot of findings that indicate continuing challenges that the agency has had with financial compliance and internal controls. Another management issue is the agency's budget, which we found lacked clarity and detail. I think it's important to note also that many of the teachers and the managers that we talked with in the agency told us that they didn't know the size of their budgets. And I think that's a fundamental thing that indicates, again, both issues with communication in the agency and financial management. In addition, employees have had ongoing concerns that they don't know the agency's administrative policies or they don't have access to them. And that may seem like a very small issue or one that's very easily addressed. But I will say that it has been a concern within the agency for many years. Next, I want to turn attention to the schools operated by the Purpich Center, the Arts High School, and Crosswinds. And before we talk individually about each of them, I want to mention one statutory issue that affects both schools. Specifically, there are no statutory provisions regarding the qualifications of the agency's school leaders. There are no requirements for Purpich to have a superintendent, for example. Even though school districts elsewhere in the state who operate high schools are required by law to have a superintendent. There are no requirements in statute related to the qualifications of persons serving as principals of Purpich Center schools. And in contrast, there are statutory requirements for principals in independent school districts, charter schools, even the Minnesota State Academies for the Deaf and Blind. Those provisions have to do with whether the principals must be licensed or whether they have to have knowledge in certain areas or certain types of training. And I should mention that in recent years, the Purpich Center has not employed someone who has acted in the function as a superintendent. And of the two principals that the Purpich Center has, one of them does not have an administrative license. Next, let's turn to a discussion of the Arts High School. And this school has for 28 years been a place that nurtures the artistic talent and creativity of high school students. And to show you a few examples on the screen of some of the work of students at the school, many of these students have pursued college after high school. While at Purpich, many of them have done very well in statewide arts competition. They've received some very good scholarships, so there are some very talented students at the Purpich Arts High School. At the same time, the Arts High School's enrollment has declined. State law limits the Arts High School to 310 students, and the school had nearly that number as recently as 2011. But the chart that's up on the screen now shows the first-day enrollment since that time, and there has been a steady decline. Now, is that because the school hasn't done enough, worked hard enough to recruit students? Is it because students have more opportunities, more choices in other places, and maybe don't have to turn to the Arts High School? Those may very well be reasons, and we don't know for sure. But I will say that we didn't see evidence that those have been topics of discussion by the Purpich Board of Directors, and even the overall decline in the enrollment of the school has not been discussed very much until quite recently. In addition, the Arts High School has not been attracting as many students from outstate Minnesota as it once did. State law says that the Purpich Center Board, quote, must plan for the enrollment of pupils on an equal basis from each congressional district. Well, there's enough vagueness in that statement that we don't completely know whether that means that there have to be exactly equal numbers of students coming from each congressional district. But what I will say is that currently nearly 80% of the students at the Arts High School are from the 7-county Twin Cities area. And there's one congressional district that does not have a single student at the Arts High School. We also examined the Arts High School students' performance on the one standardized test that they are obligated to administer, and that is the 11th grade math test, the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment. In 2016, only 18% of tested students at the Arts High School were deemed proficient on the math test. That compares with a statewide average of 47%. We also learned that in 2014, the Purpich Center did not even administer this required test to students at the Arts High School. In addition, we found that attendance policies at the Arts High School were not enforced in recent years, and specifically during the previous two school years. Parents and students are supposed to receive notification when multiple unexcused absences occur. And we heard ourselves from teachers, from other staff at the school, a level of some frustration that these policies have not been enforced. And some of these people specifically said it has affected the rigor and the culture at the school. One other fact that's worth noting about the high school, and that would certainly be of interest to a finance committee, and that is the average cost per student at the Arts High School, which is currently more than $20,000 per year.
Mr. Alter, I had a quick question for you on that. Can you tell me how that was calculated, the cost per student? And if you want to wait until we get to the financial audit, that's fine, but I just want, before I forgot, wanted to plant the seed. I was doing a little back of the napkin calculating when I was looking through the financial audit, and I was just taking the general fund appropriation only divided by the number of students, so I didn't count any of the other grants, and I got something more like over $33,000 a student.
Madam Chair, what we did is we took essentially the actual expenditures that were reported by the agency specifically for the Arts High School, and this would have been in 2016. And I should say that you can calculate this in some different ways. If you want, you can take out the lunchroom costs. You can take out the dorm cost. It's going to be a high cost per student regardless. If we keep in all of those costs, in 2016, it was about $21,300. If we take out lunch and dorm cost, brings it down to $18,800. And the average statewide for other schools is in the ballpark of $11,500.
Okay. Thank you.
And, you know, I think this is relevant because there have been proposals in the past. Some have said, well, can't we just turn the Arts High School into a charter school? But I think that with that kind of spending per student, it would be difficult with the revenues the charter schools typically get to make a go of it at that level of spending per student. But I would also say that that's certainly very driven by the enrollment decline that we've seen in the last few years.
Representative Murphy has a question. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Alter, could you just repeat those comparisons that you went over quickly, the 40% and the other things where you were making the comparisons and what you found out at the Arts High School?
Okay.
Mr. Alter.
Representative Murphy. Again, in terms of the cost per student, there are different ways to calculate it. If you keep in, and again, these are actual expenditures as reported to the state accounting systems by the Arts High School. If you include everything, including dorm and cafeteria costs, it's $21,300 roughly per student. Let's just take out dorm, and that brings it down to about $19,700. And then if we also take out cafeteria costs, that brings it down to $18,800 roughly. And these can be compared with a statewide average for a typical school of about
$11,500. And
Representative Mr. Alter, and how many people did you say were at the art schools?
Madam Chair, the Arts High School, during the year that these calculations were done, I think its student population then was somewhere around 210. It's down to around 180 right now. So there has been some decline since these numbers. So potentially the cost per student has gone up.
Representative Murphy.
And then, Madam Chair, Mr. Alder, there were two tests not even given to the students?
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, the one test that the school is obligated to give because it only serves 11th and 12th grade is the 11th grade math test. In 2014, the Arts High School elected not to give the MCA to its students. And we talked with the high school administrator about that, and they made a choice that they said was done in consultation with the Department of Education. They said they wanted students to focus on the ACT test and not on the MCA. We talked with the Department of Education, and they said that's a compulsory test, and they said we didn't give a go-ahead for them not to give it, but they should have given it.
And Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Alter, were there, for that time period then, was there an increase in the ACT scores?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I don't know. We didn't look at the ACT scores of students at the Arts High School.
And just one more question.
Representative Murphy.
Chair, Mr. Alter, did the students, these 210 students, have the opportunity to do PSEO or college in the schools in addition to being a perfect student?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, you're hearing no from from your policy chair, and I would...
I was going to walk
I wasn't sure, but I, I'm going to defer to her.
Okay. I'll take that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Please proceed, Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, I think we'll turn next to a little discussion of Crosswinds School. And before I talk about some of the issues raised in our report, I think it's important to say a few words about the history. The school actually started in 1998. At that time, there were some school districts that eventually became known as the East Metro Integration District, or EMID, that jointly established Crosswinds. And as I said earlier, it was intended to be a magnet school for students of different cultural, racial, and ethnic backgrounds. The legislature provided more than $20 million in bonds to establish a permanent school building for that purpose, and that building was completed in Woodbury, and the school moved to that location in 2001. And then for a period of years, EMID operated this school and one other for the purpose of promoting voluntary integration, but over time, I think the member districts of EMID began to decide that they preferred using their state integration dollars for purposes other than running schools. And so EMID started looking for other options for Crosswinds, and that included the possibility of transferring into another school district. They explored those options, and finally in 2013, EMID voted to support a transfer of Crosswinds to the Purpich Center. That didn't happen right away. It needed legislative approval, which finally came in 2014. So how has Crosswinds fared during these few years under the Purpich Center? And I should mention that the Purpich Center actually started managing Crosswinds in the 2013-14 school year under a management contract with EMID. Enrollment has not rebounded to the levels that existed when EMID ran the school. Now, there was uncertainty about the school's future going back to the years when EMID was running it, and so even before Purpich took over, there had been a decline that was occurring in the enrollment. But in the chart that you see on the screen, in green is the last year that EMID ran the school, and there were about 350 students that year. The next year when Purpich ran it under contract, there were about 172 students, and that level that remained about level for the next couple of years after that. Purpich officials testified at the time that they were conveyed the school that they intended to grow the school by about 50 students per year, but that hasn't happened. In the most recent year, the fall 2016 student count as of October 1st was 129 students. So again, the enrollment trend has not been in the direction that everyone had hoped. Likewise, the student test scores have not gone in the right direction. This chart now on the screen shows in green the percentage of students that were deemed proficient at Crosswinds in spring 2013, and those were the last tests that were administered by EMID. Compared with in red, the percentage of students deemed proficient in the most recent year, spring of 2016. And in science, reading, math, the test scores have gone down compared both with other schools and with the goals that have been set internally by Purpich. The level of performance has not met expectations.
All right. And I apologize, Mr. Alter, but if it's all right with you, we'll just allow members to ask questions as they come up. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And looking at the chart talking about the enrollment in Crosswinds, so maybe like one slide back, from 2012 to 2013, there's a dramatic decline in enrollment. Is there an explanation for what happened?
Madam Chair and members, and I intend to mention that certainly when there was discussion at EMID about the potential for transferring the school elsewhere or even the possibility of closing it, there was a lot of uncertainty about the school's futures. And you can imagine that if you were a parent and had a student at Crosswinds, that might lead you to look at some other options. And I don't think there's any question that when those ideas were being discussed and debated, some other parents just went elsewhere. And so I don't think that decline from 2012 to 2013, I don't think we can blame Purpich for that. I think that there was uncertainty about the school's future, and then that was something that Purpich had to contend with when they took the school over, but they still hoped to grow it from that point forward.
Representative Sanchez, thank you.
All right, I don't see other questions, so we'll continue on. Thank you.
There's also been significant staff turnover at Crosswind since Purpich began managing it. There have been four principals in 4 years. Many other staff and teachers have left and been replaced. In a number of cases, the teachers have said they felt under-supported. I earlier mentioned the cost per student at the Arts High School. Crosswinds also has a high cost per student, more than $18,000 per student last year. And again, that's before this year's enrollment decline. In fact, the Purpich Center's general fund appropriation has had to pay for a pretty sizable share of the school's cost because state aid has not been sufficient to cover these costs. And some of the Crosswinds staff costs have, in fact, had to be paid for from, I'll be talking in a moment about outreach by the Purpich Center, but some of the day-to-day expenditures at Crosswinds, including, for example, the principal's salary, have been paid for out of the Purpich Center's outreach budget that were earmarked for these other statewide purposes. Crosswinds officials have put in place a number of things this year, trying to provide better staff training, trying to improve educational options for students, and maybe there will be payoff for those efforts. Maybe that will help enrollment, improve test scores, but we just don't know at this point. I think what we can say is that the first 3 years of Crosswinds being operated by the Purpich Center have been a disappointment, and they raise questions about the school's viability. The final area that I want to talk about is statewide outreach. I briefly want to discuss the main programs that Purpich administers in these areas. Turnaround Arts is a national program, and the Purpich Center currently administers this program in 8 Minnesota schools. These are schools that have historically had low academic performance. And what the Purpich staff have done is to work with those schools to infuse the arts in a way that will hopefully make school-wide improvements. Arts Integration is a program for selected schools in certain parts of the state. And in those schools, teams of teachers develop individual lessons that combine the arts with other subjects. Purpich has provided funding to support what are called regional centers in some parts of the state. And in those cases, there's a host school district that coordinates training and professional development for other schools in a region. And then Purpich has also employed education specialists to provide tailored expertise to individual schools and school districts. And Purpich, not that long ago, had specialists in each of the arts areas, but today it has only one full-time person working in this capacity. We think there have been some positive effects.
Thank you, Mr. Alter. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Alter, in the outreach capacities and the special teachers or the regional centers, in that congressional district that doesn't have any Purpich students, are there outreach programs going on a sustainable basis?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, you know, we can look at that in more detail and get back to you on that, but it just comes to mind that that congressional district that did not have any Purpich students was Congressional District 7, which is most of the western part of the state. I think it doesn't include the extreme southwest. And Purpich Center definitely has, they've got a regional center. They've got some of the arts integration programs in certain schools in that area. I don't want to make it sound like it's something that the schools throughout that region have access to, because they don't. But there certainly are pockets within that congressional district of some of these outreach efforts.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Alter, a year or two ago, we heard about a technology, a inconsistency of technology that was supposed to be helping the Purpich School deliver to the academies for the blind and deaf in Faribault. and that didn't work out and all that kind of stuff. Does the Purpich School still have outreach or not with the academies, the state academies?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, you know, I'm not aware of any particular thing that, that Purpich does with the academies, and maybe they can speak to that if there's something I'm not aware of. I do know there was an issue about whether or not there would be technology funding for both the academies and for Purpich. And in the last round, the academies got funding and Purpich did not. And I think that the Purpich Center feels that it's fallen behind in terms of what it can do in its schools because of kind of the state of where its both hardware and software are. Okay.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Alter, I guess you can continue.
Madam Chair, I start by saying that there are, we think, some positive effects of the outreach. Several years ago, Purpich staff worked with state officials to draft statewide arts standards, and they have also worked with individual school districts to help them implement those standards. But I think that there are a number of specific outreach activities mandated in state law that the Purpich Center is not implementing. For example, the agency is supposed to be offering summer arts institutes for students in grades 9 through 12, and that hasn't happened for many years. And there are other examples in our report of some specific things that are in statute, mandated by statute, that the Purpich Center hasn't been doing. And certainly this may partly reflect what we talked about earlier, the diminishment of the agency's general fund appropriations, but the agency is still mandated to perform these functions. In addition, the Purpich Center's efforts have not reached a large percentage of the state's teachers in any given year, and many arts teachers indicated to us that they'd like more help. For example, Purpich has not had a music specialist on staff to provide outreach for several years, and as you might guess, music is the arts area that accounts for the largest share of arts teachers throughout Minnesota. I think the Purpich Center deserves credit for initiating some outside evaluations of its outreach efforts. Those evaluations have shown mostly positive impacts, as reflected in surveys or observations. I don't think we know much about the impact of outreach on student achievement. I don't think those studies have suggested things very directly. And I think some of the national literature suggests that arts education, even though they may have very positive impacts and may be things that are very much worth pursuing, the national studies have suggested that the impacts on student achievement are mixed.
And Mr. Alter, when you talk about those outreach, does that include the turnaround arts program?
Madam Chair, yes.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I know that there was, for example, a national study a couple of years ago done of not Minnesota, but the turnaround arts programs in some other states. And at that point, and that's the most recent national study that we've seen, but that study concluded that it was too soon to know whether there was an impact on student achievement, even though there were some other intermediate measures that had very positive impacts.
Thank you.
And then next I will just briefly walk through the recommendations. We have a complete list of the recommendations on pages 91 and 92 of the report, but let me just briefly hit some highlights. Again, we think the Purpich Center Board should provide clearer direction to the agency and stronger oversight, setting goals and holding the agency accountable. The board should take steps to ensure greater public input and participation, posting meeting minutes and board materials online, and offering more opportunity for public comment. Board policy requires annual evaluations of the executive director, and we think the board should abide by that policy. The board should receive periodic reports on school activities, on things like enrollment and other measures of success. And in general, we think the operations of the school should be subject to more board review and more active board review. The agency should comply with what the statutes require, and if the statutes need to be updated, then the agency has a responsibility to bring that to the legislature's attention. And for the legislature, we think that the legislature should consider changes in the role, size, and composition of the Purpich Center Board. It is a large board at 15 members. We think the legislature may wish to consider a smaller board, or the legislature may wish to specify some requirements of members that it wishes to see. But I think that we also caution in this report that those types of statutory changes aren't panaceas. They aren't full-scale solutions to what's facing the Purpose Center. Ultimately, the most important changes are ones that the Purpose Center and the board are going to have to make from within. We think that the legislature should consider minimum requirements for the school administrators at Purpich, just as are in place for other schools around the state. For example, principals either should be required to have administrative licenses or to undergo certain training subject to the review of the governing board. And we think that the legislature should consider updates to the Purpich Center statutes. And again, the Purpich Center leaders have to be a part of that discussion and should be suggesting things. But there are things in the outreach activities that perhaps need to be looked at again. And the legislature may also play a role in helping to set priorities among those outreach activities. And finally, our report suggests that the legislature consider the overall scope of the agency and whether that should be amended. And when I say scope, basically the scope of this agency is statewide outreach and operating two schools. And we pose four options in this report, ranging from keeping that scope the way it is now to eliminating the agency altogether. We think that of the agency's current functions, the one that is the most tenuous is Crosswind School. I think that perhaps the Purpich Center could be a stronger agency if its agencies were narrowed. I think there's also an argument that perhaps the recent changes in the agency's board maybe have created an opportunity for the agency to make some changes and to get things back on track, maybe without any sorts of drastic changes in scope. And we don't offer recommendations about what changes the legislature should make. Each of them has each of these options has certain risks and potential consequences. But we do think the time is right to start thinking about this and considering what it is that the agency does best and what is financially sustainable. So overall, our evaluation concluded that the Purpich Center has, for more than 30 years, played an important role in arts education. In recent years, the board has not provided sufficient leadership, and the legislature should consider what this agency can and should accomplish, and then make whatever adjustments in statutes and resources will enable the agency to achieve that. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions, and we will turn to Cecile Ferkel when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Alter. Member questions. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Alter, and thank you, staff, again, for your great work. To what extent, Mr. Alter, does the Department of Education have oversight of Purpich and then subsequently Crosswinds? Because I noticed, you know, in the report, when it came to certain submissions Purpich had to make, the department would make a request they wouldn't receive, they'd make another request, but then it didn't seem to persist. So, you know, I'm thinking the accountability must go someplace. Is it admin, or is it the Department of Education, or is it both?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, there are certain requirements that in statute that the Purpich Center has to provide certain reports to the Department of Education. And we're going to be talking about that more in just a minute related to the financial audit. There were a couple of reports that the Purpich Center did not provide in a timely way, and the Department of Education reminded them gently and then ultimately threatened loss of dollars. But I would say that the interaction between the department and Purpich is fairly limited. Again, there are certain types of reporting that all schools have to do. You have to report your fall enrollment, and for an integration plan, which is required for Crosswinds, Purpich has to prepare that, and the department is going to look to see whether that's been submitted. They're fairly routine things. I wouldn't want to give the impression that the Department of Education has a real rigorous oversight. That really is more the board's function, I think, and so the department is involved in a limited way.
So, Madam Chair,
Representative Erickson,
just a final comment, then. It's really the executive branch who has oversight over this agency, since it is an agency. I think that's the conclusion I would have to draw.
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, that's correct. There is the board that is statutorily created, and there is the executive branch, particularly the the Department of Education.
Thank you.
Representative Sandstead.
Madam Chair, point of personal privilege.
Please state your point of personal privilege.
I just want to make a comment on the slide regarding the regional centers and the educational specialists. As a music teacher who left the classroom roughly 5 weeks ago, I just want to make the comment that I've utilized both the ed specialist and the regional centers, and it has, and not in the last couple of years, but probably 2-3 years out, it has been some of the finest professional development I've had access to in my specialty area, music. So I just, however we proceed with this, I think those pieces are critical and so valuable to educators.
Thank you.
I believe it has been 2014 since the Purpose Center has had a music specialist on staff, and we certainly heard from people we talked to many compliments about the work that those people, the education specialists, have done. And I think what the regional centers can do is more limited. They usually provide some workshops and that sort of thing. But I think frankly, arts teachers are looking for whatever help they can get.
Thank you. And Mr. Alter, just along those lines, and you mentioned music specialists to help with that. Was the Purpose Center, have they been keeping up with other programs or institutes for teachers in school districts and maybe visual arts and other things? Or, I mean, I'm trying to understand what the status is of the functions and the responsibilities of Purpose Center.
Madam Chair, the area that has probably had the largest and most notable cutback within the outreach function is what we call the education specialist. And again, there was a time when they used to have at least one full-time person in each of the arts areas who could go out and work with school districts. And we're down to having one person, and I believe his specialty is visual arts, and he kind of covers the bases. And there's a part-time person who works with theater. But clearly in the last few years, the resources have been stretched thin in this area. And that also reflects some management decisions that have been made by Purpich as they've tried to decide whether to put their outreach money in certain programs and less in others. I would say that the education specialists who are doing kind of the one-on-one work with school districts and more ad hoc work, that's where there has been more of a reduction.
Thank you. Ms. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a few questions, I guess, mostly related to Crosswind School. And one of the things that concerns me is the cost per student. But like you said, so there's so many fixed costs, and with fewer students, that raises the cost per student. My question is there an alternative that you know of that you could think of to keep Crosswinds operational, but maybe under different management, not with the involvement of the Purpose Center? Or do you think that with the results of your audit and some of the changes of the board members and so forth at Purpich, that it would be better to give that more time to see how those changes take place and maybe hopefully see an increase in the enrollment?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and members, we don't have a specific recommendation on what path Purpich should follow, but you know, this is really the situation that EMID, the East Metro Integration District, found itself in just a few years ago, where they felt that it was not financially sustainable to continue to operate Crosswinds. And so they tried to find first another school district that would keep the school essentially as it was, as an integration school with an arts and science focus. And the bottom line is they really didn't find anybody at that time. And then Purpich came forward and said, well, frankly, EMID, I think, made the first reach out to Purpich and said, well, what about you? And Purpich agreed to explore it, and then they submitted a proposal. But I think that's sort of the situation we find ourselves in again today, and whether maybe things have changed. Maybe there is a school district that would consider today operating Crosswinds, and I've certainly heard others talk about that, and I think there are some discussions about that occurring. Maybe the school could continue as a charter school. And again, I don't want to rule out the possibility that it could continue under Purpich, but again, the trends haven't been going in the right direction in terms of enrollment, cost, test scores, so something needs to change.
Representative Jurgens.
But do you think that with the changes to the board and some of the administrators at the school, that those changes have already taken place? We just haven't been able to find out how successful that would be.
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, members, I just don't know at this point. I mean, frankly, some of the board members were just appointed in this past month, and we just haven't had an opportunity to see exactly what this board is going to do. We haven't seen a real plan for going forward from the board. As I mentioned, there hasn't been a strategic plan by the board. It'd be great to see one going forward, and it'd be great to see some very specific responses to our reports before judging whether the board is capable of kind of fixing the problems that we've identified.
Representative Jurgens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe I heard you say that there's been four different principals over some short period of years. I don't know what the number was. Over 4 years. So the current principal, how long has he or she been in that position? Because as we've heard in so many other presentations, how important the role of the principal is to the success of the school.
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and members, the current principal began serving as principal in August of 2016, so just a few months ago.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Alter, this seems to have turned into a metro high school for the arts, looking at the data that you've provided us. And in light of that, I'm not sure how many of those students would have been residing in the residence. But even as concerning as that, if not many were, is the attendance record. And I noticed that you did examine the absences in 2016. The median number of unexcused absences during a senior year was 10. And then six students who had more than 40 unexcused absences in their senior year, and they still graduated. In a public school, that wouldn't be tolerated without the parents being highly involved. And it's hard to track whether or not these parents of these students are actually or actually were informed, because your narrative doesn't really note that, even though I think the original policy said so. But I don't expect a comment on that, Madam Chair. It's just that that's very disturbing when we're talking about accountability. And in this week of school choice, where accountability has been a major a consternation, I think, among some at this table, this is very concerning that the accountability here is solely lacking. And I would say that the board is definitely dysfunctional.
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, just to clarify on that point, during that year that we looked at absences and specifically unexcused absences, that was one of the 2 years, and it was at least 2 years, but 2 years for sure that there was not real enforcement of the attendance policies, specifically notification of either the parents or students when there were multiple unexcused absences. And I don't even know that the board has been aware of that. Clearly, the board should be aware. Yeah. But I also have to say, you know, the board can only know what it knows. And at some point, you know, somebody has to inform them. And I think you're right. I mean, I think we have to be concerned about the impact of that on the culture of the school, and we certainly heard concerns about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. And just to follow up a question I had, how many students are currently residing in the dormitory, and how many live at home and travel to the school?
Madam Chair, so we've got 180-some students, the last I heard, at the Arts High School. And the last I heard, there were about 60 to 70 in the dorms, and maybe Purpich staff can confirm that. And it used to be that the dorms were, that it was a fairly specific rule that you could only live in the dorms if you lived X number of miles away. I can't remember exactly what it was. That's been loosened a bit as there are now more metro students. And so now, under certain circumstances, students who live in the metro area can also reside in the dorms.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure if you're aware of this. You've probably got better things to do, or maybe not. The governor's budget was released on Tuesday, and in that, he upped the budget for Perpich by $200,000, and then he also has an additional wanted appropriation in there for over $2 million for IT. And so I'm just wondering, in light of what you've learned in this audit, you know, what level of confidence you think we could have or should have in, you know, giving those funds to this school.
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, first of all, we did not look at the IT specifically at the Perpich Center, even though we've certainly heard from many people concerns that go back years about the state of their technology. That's a longstanding concern. Otherwise, I think it's really, frankly, for the Perpich Center leadership to assure you that going forward, that the kinds of issues that we have identified in this report are going to be addressed. I mean, I think we say in this report that the general fund appropriations have eroded, and that has certainly made it more difficult for this agency to provide the services, even the original ones that they were set up to provide. But I think it's that time of year when the agency has to come before you and convince you that there's a plan going forward that will set the agency on the right track and that they merit not only the base appropriation but something beyond that. So we don't have a recommendation on that, and I would certainly hope that the agency can make its case to you.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When was the last time the legislative auditor did take a look at Perpich Center? Has it been in the recent history, or has it been quite a while?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, we do financial audits of the Perpich Center roughly every 4 years. The evaluations that we do are determined by a decision of the Legislative Audit Commission, so there's not a cycle. And the Legislative Audit Commission has at times considered evaluations of the Perpich Center, but this is the first one that we've done in their history since 1985.
Thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to quickly express appreciation for Representative Juergens' questions on the Crosswind School. It seems to me there is it's hard to disentangle all this, but there is a very unique situation there, and I think it may benefit us, and perhaps this is maybe better done in Chair Erickson's committee, to be able to engage several other players out there for advice and thoughts, you know, particularly the EMED district. Of course, they're not EMED anymore. They changed their name, and perhaps the other integration districts. What has concerned me over the years with the Crosswinds issue really had to do with what changes there meant for the state's integration, school integration approach. Does it mean anything? We obviously bonded $20 million for a facility under a particular thinking that that school would play a major role in fulfilling the state's compelling interest to prevent racial segregation and promote racial integration in our schools. And so I don't know what it means now. You know, we made that investment not that long ago, and I think we should it'd be good for us to get some guidance from folks out in the field about what they think that means. I also think that Chair Erickson did a really good job the last session of taking another legislative auditor's report relative to the licensure board of teaching in particular, and created a process by which we then spent, you know, the interim taking a legislative auditor's report and then engaging with a broad group of stakeholders to come back with recommendations for more permanent behavior or actions on our part. And this may be one as well. I mean, I'm kind of wrestling back and forth about this, and I'm not just talking about Crosswinds, but Perpich. You know, clearly in my mind, a Perpich school is a statewide asset, and there's two ways in which that's done that, right? Provided the professional development work that Representative Sanchez spoke about, but also being accessible to students all around the state. Both of those are not happening like they used to happen, right now anyway. And so, again, does that beg a question for us to rethink the whole strategy, both on the integration issue as well as on the role of the Perpich school? That fills me with a little bit of anxiety to say that, you know, but I think we should constantly be a body that's asking and checking our assumptions that we've done in the past. And so, therefore, I think we need some kind of vehicles to do that, because trying to do that in a legislative session where things move so fast, and really our job is probably best going to be about how do we make appropriations, you know, and tinker a little bit with policies here. That's what we're kind of set up to do, is, you know, in a regular legislative session. This one might require a much more deliberative, longer process for us. So it's not a question, it's just an observation about stuff that I'm wrestling with, and I think there's a lot of room for bipartisan work in this regard.
Thank you, Representative Mariani, and I think, I presume most of us don't want to be in a rush to judgment over what should happen. We're talking about children enrolled in school and on a pathway, and parents have chosen that. But certainly the information provided by the auditor is disturbing, to say the least. And we are going to have to make some difficult decisions on appropriations quite soon. That's really all I have to say about that at this point. So, Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the Auditor's Office. You always come with compelling information. I'm wondering, Madam Chair, if there's anybody here, representative from the Perpich or the Crosswinds.
Yes, I understand there is a gentleman from Perpich.
Yes, I'm the acting chair of the board.
Oh, thank you. Would you come on down to the testifier table, sir? Thank you for being here. If you would please just provide us your name for the tape.
Sure. My name is Ben Vander Kooi. I'm the acting chair of the board since January 11. And I'd be happy to answer questions or make a statement, or whatever you prefer.
Thank you. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, thank you to the committee. I don't want to make this adversarial. That's not the intent here. But I always think there's a why. And I know back when Chair Mariani brought us down to Crosswinds, and we had some conversation there. We've been looking at this. So tell us a story. Tell us, fill in some of the gaps. And I want to put out there the caveat, you know, I've done a lot of businesses. There are sometimes you just have to make decisions. And if we can help you with those decisions, if sometimes it's just we have to make whatever that decision is, because people may be too close to us. I've seen lots of different people trying. I see a lack of interest. You can go look this up at all the different relationships of how we've tried to do all this. So tell us the story.
Sure.
Mr. Vander Kooi.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. But first, let me tell you how I got on the board, because that'll tell the tale. I was appointed by the governor back in July 20, I started, with the mandate to find out what was going on at Perpich and to take appropriate action. That was my charge. On a 15-member board, it took us a while to get a majority. I think you all know how that works. And frankly, January 11 of this year is when the majority finally was in place with a reform agenda. I'm encouraged by that board. The governor spent an extraordinary amount of time and his staff to get the right people in place. We have a very diverse board statewide and in other ways with a lot of experience. Briefly on my experience, I'm a city attorney in southwest Minnesota. I have chaired a number of state boards. The Arts Board I've been on twice, 2 years as chair. I worked on the Trustee Kennedy Advisory Council, and I chaired that for a number of years. Currently, I'm on the Historical Society Board. I have a pretty good idea about how nonprofits should work. I will tell you, when I walked to my first meeting in September, I found the most dysfunctional board I have ever seen in my life. And it was up to me to figure out why. And I think basically they were not paying attention. They didn't seem to get the information they needed. They didn't ask the right questions. And the staff was running the show, and frankly, the former executive director was had too much control without board involvement. So we have been working since then to change that culture, and I'm pleased to tell you that we have now in place a majority, I think, of at least 9, perhaps soon 10 new members on the board. who will be looking at this situation and taking very seriously the roadmap we've gotten from the legislative auditor.
Representative Christian.
Follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Vandercoy. So that's interesting. So as you came in, you found a very dysfunctional board. We've had testimony here last session talking about the employee-management relationships. That's interesting to me, and I'm glad you pointed that out, but it's interesting to me because this has been under the microscopic scrutiny for a long time. So, I mean, how did we get to a point where people just thought, well, we can't pay attention? I mean, we've been doing everything sideways, coming down there, offering time. I mean, why did this not get taken seriously, in your opinion?
Mr. Vandercoy.
Madam Chair, Representative, you know, it's hard for me to speak to what happened before I got on the board. But I did find that, and this is my longstanding belief about nonprofits. I do a lot of this. This is part of my law practice. It's really, really important to pay attention to recruitment and then to get boards to coalesce around goals and visions. That wasn't happening at Burbage. And the governor made the decision it was time to replace the board. So every one of the appointments since that time have been new appointments, people with experience in the field. That's why I'm encouraged, why I'm still involved as a volunteer to make this thing work.
Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Vandercoy. So I have to ask, I mean, it sounds like you've taken some steps, but who was asleep at the switch before, and how do we prevent that again? I mean, who was, again, I just have a hard time wondering who didn't take this seriously enough to do, I mean, did we put somebody in place who just said, oh, it'll all be fine? I'm really struggling with this one. Maybe you've corrected it, but who was it? The government's office? The governor's office? Was it the executive branch? Who was asleep at the switch saying, let's just not talk about this?
Mr. Vandercoy.
Madam Chair, Representative, it's hard for me to point fingers of blame. But frankly, that's where the audit has been very helpful for us to show what the deficiencies are. So maybe it'd be more helpful for me to tell you what steps we already have in place to move forward, to answer those questions. Tomorrow we're meeting with the legislative auditor to go over in some detail, not only the legislative audit, but also since we run crosswinds, we've got a couple of CPA audits that we are going to be looking at that were mandated by the Department of Education. So that's where that piece starts. At our annual meeting in 2 weeks, we'll have new leadership elected, and we're going to repopulate the committees with two new committees and a task force. So let me tell you what those are. We're going to have a new IT committee that's going to have a special focus on the technology piece, especially the arts library we're mandated to have. Also one on outreach, because that's a part of the mission that has been sadly neglected. So those committees will be focusing in those areas. Plus, and we've gotten the message loud and clear from the House committees especially, that we need to take a serious look at crosswinds. There will be a task force appointed with a very short time frame. We anticipate by the middle of March, by our March meeting, we will have a decision on what to do with crosswinds. I will tell you, because Mr. Alter mentioned it as well, we've been approached by some school districts who would like to take that facility over. And we will evaluate that. We'll look at all the possibilities, talk to the stakeholders. I wish I could tell you more about that, but still the very early stages. I will tell you this, that I was this morning out at crosswinds and talked to the faculty to encourage them and to talk about the reform that is coming, because it is coming, and it will happen soon.
Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple more questions, and thank you for that. Is there buy-in from the faculty? Is there buy-in from the people that are going to be vested in this? And that's important, because I really want this to work. I hope that my line of questioning is more, I've been out there, and I want to see some of this happen, but is there buy-in to where they're going to say, you know what, we're going to have to roll our sleeves up and really do some things differently and not just wait this out?
Mr. Vandercoy.
Madam Chair, Representative, I've met both with the Perpich faculty at the Arts High School and this morning at Crosswinds. There is a palpable sense of relief that finally something is happening. They understand change is coming. They understand it won't be maybe good for all of them. But they understand the institution they believe in will survive if we take the right steps. So, yes, I think there's buy-in from the faculty in both schools, and we will certainly keep close to them to hear what they're saying.
And last one.
Representative Krisha.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And so my last one for you is, what are the two benchmarks? When we cross this one, we cut our losses and go elsewhere. When we cross this one, it's success, and we come back and we celebrate. What are those two benchmarks?
Sure. Mr. Vandercoy.
Madam Chair, Representative, the current thinking, and by the way, our board has had one meeting, really, so we still are working through this. But my sense is that we have to address very quickly the crosswind school. So that'll be the first benchmark, what we do with that. And frankly, we'll be coming back to this group and to other groups because that's a state-bonded facility. So we need to get legislative approval. Our goal would be to have that resolved by mid-March. I've told the faculties by Easter, with the hope that the legislature can still act this session to do a transfer. So that's the Crosswinds piece. And the other piece is going to take a little longer for this reason. The former executive director retired effective January 2nd. So we will have a temporary executive director on board within the next 2 weeks, I hope, and start the search for a new executive director. We hope to have that person in place by July 1. So those are kind of the two fronts as we look at them, and the board is committed to making this happen.
Last one.
Representative Crescia.
Thank you. And just thank you for that. And my last comment is just bring some confidence back. So we can support and find out. That's really what it's about is, these are as Chair Loon expressed, there's kids at stake here. And what we've said in committee many times, and I think we believe this, is we'll put policies in place, but ultimately we believe educators are going to do the right thing. So try to find a way to bring some confidence back to this committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And members, we have several people with questions, but we still want to hear from Ms. Ferkel on the legislative audit. So I'm going to ask if we could have Ms. Ferkel do her presentation and then maybe bring you back, Mr. Vanderkooy, if the questions are for you.
I'd be happy.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Ferkel, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Cecile Ferkel. I am the Deputy Legislative Auditor responsible for the Financial Audit Division. And at the same time that we were, our Program Evaluation Division was doing their evaluation, we were conducting a financial audit. The report is the one with the lighter blue color on the cover. We looked at the time period from July 2013 through March 2016. So that was fiscal year 14, 15, and much of fiscal year 16. And what we were looking at was, excuse me, the financial activity, the revenues, the expenditures, and how well the Purpose Center was complying with statutes and state policies and administering. As a state agency, they are responsible to follow state policies. I can direct your attention to page 8. Our conclusion was that internal controls were not adequate and that there were many instances of noncompliance. This is the most serious conclusion that we give, and there are 12 findings in this report across a wide breadth of areas that we looked at. I would like to take a few minutes to talk about a couple of them if we have time for that. Finding 1 on page 9 is the issue that Representative Erickson, I believe, was referencing too. As part of the responsibilities for Crosswinds School, Perpich continued to receive funding through the Department of Education, and part of the law that allowed that required them to report to the Department of Education financial information in the same manner that other school districts all across the state do. That was not something that Perpich had that the Perpich High School had been required to do, but now Crosswinds was required to do. And we felt that that part of the law really didn't resonate with the management because they missed deadlines. And when the Department of Education notified them, the first request reminding them that deadlines had been missed kind of went on deaf ears. There was no response to that. They followed up a few months later with another notification that this information was required and it was now months late. Ultimately, in In October of 2016, so just a few months ago, the Department of Education notified them that they were going to reduce their special education aid entitlements from almost $500,000 down to zero because the financial information had not been provided. Over this past summer, Perpich did contract with the CPA firm to compile that information and to put it in a format that was would fit with the Department of Education's requirements. It's our understanding that they have now submitted the information, but that the department is reviewing that information to determine whether they will restore that special ed funding or not. So we thought, especially in an environment where, we've been talking about limited financial resources, to have put at risk $500,000 of special ed funding because the Kirkwood Center had not addressed the requirement to report that information. We felt that was pretty significant. Now I'd like you to turn to finding 2 on page 10, and actually on page 11, it's that first bullet there. One of the Purpich Center's biggest expenditures, no surprise, is payroll costs for their teachers, for their administration, and they follow the same payroll practices that all other state employees do. They report their information through an automated payroll timekeeping system that the state uses throughout the executive branch. Their supervisors sign off in an automated fashion for the time that employees say they work, and that rolls up into the state payroll system, and that typically is the basis for the payments that the employees receive. We found a very unusual situation here when we compared the coding of the payroll payments in the state's accounting system to the timesheets that employees had completed and supervisors had approved. We found that in 25% of the instances that we looked at, there were discrepancies between those two things. So this timesheet reporting, supervisory review is really the fundamental control to ensure the integrity of the payroll system, that employees are being paid for work they've performed as asserted to, as confirmed by their supervisors. 25% discrepancy between what was confirmed and approved and authorized and then what ultimately got paid. Of course, that raised our a red flag for us, and we did more in-depth look at those payments. We didn't see that there were inappropriate payments being made, but unsupported payments and unauthorized payments in the sense that they weren't approved by their supervisors. Typically, in a typical state agency, we just, you know, there might be a one-off reason. State policy allows for this because, of course, errors can happen and corrections have to be made. But when those corrections are made, policy requires that they be documented and authorized, and we saw no documentation to support those changes. So it really was those two findings, and then the breadth and the extent of the rest of the findings that we ultimately concluded that internal controls were not adequate and noncompliance had occurred. So we also found that some of our recommendations from our prior audit 4 years ago had not been implemented as well. And that's and those findings are repeated in this report too. So that's a real quick recap of the report. You've heard a lot from us today, and I know we've answered some of your questions, but we're happy to answer any more that you have.
Thank you, Ms. Ferkel. You, I presume, have done other financial audits of other agencies and entities. Is it common for your recommendations from 4 years ago to not have been acted upon or corrected when you come back 4 years later to do an audit?
Madam Chair, members, we typically see more attention focused on resolving findings, and certainly over the passage of time, something can be resolved, and then the controls again deteriorate. But no, we were disappointed that more of our recommendations had not been implemented. One area, for example, we had prior audit recommendations related to how well the Purpich Center monitored its fixed assets, its equipment. There had not been an inventory done at the time of the past audit, and we again found that situation 4 years later to be the same.
Thank you. And what is your practice with regards to how you distribute your audit reports once they're completed? So would it be practice for you then if you did an audit of Purpich to provide a copy to each board member, to the governor's office, to the Department of Education, or is that more that you let the public know that this is available and they choose to seek that information themselves?
Madam Chair, we certainly provide to all the members of the board a copy of the report. We also would provide notice of the report and a summary of the results of the audit to the Legislative Audit Commission. And we also would make presentations such as we're doing today to interested committees.
All right. So all of the government agencies and that with oversight over Purpich and the board members and that, we're all provided this information.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Thank you. All right. So we have Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. Ms. Frickle, was there any ever any indication that when Perpich took over Crosswinds, they understood that there's a UFAR system and it was far different from their state agency system? I would think that that would have been a pre-planning that should have occurred when the conveyance, or even during the 1 year that they had the management company. Why wouldn't the management company have been aware that there's a particular system when you're in the K-12 system? So that really bothers me that wasn't ready, up and ready, because that's one of the reasons, you know, that they got the warning about the special education funding.
Ms. Ferkel.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not sure I can answer that specifically. It certainly was our impression that they had not adequately prepared for that more unique reporting. That, and it would have been my thought that Crosswinds, as having been before Perpich took over management, that Crosswinds or some oversight entity of Crosswinds would have had to have reported that information already. So perhaps that's a good question for the Perpich staff.
All right, so we have several other members on, and I'm not sure if your questions were for the legislative auditors or for Mr. Vanderkooy. So what I might suggest, Mr. Vanderkooy, is that you come down if we can have three seats at the testifier table, and that way wherever the questions may be directed, we'll have someone there to respond. Representative Juergens.
I just had a very quick, thank you, Madam Chair, just a very quick question for Mr. Vanderkooy. You mentioned other school districts that have possibly expressed some interest, and I realize that you personally may not have been part of those conversations. I don't know, but and it's early to tell, too, but do you know if their interest would be in keeping Crosswinds as an arts school or more along lines of getting their hands on the asset to use as a grade elementary school, middle school, high school, something else?
Mr. Vanderkooy.
Chair, Representative, we've made it clear. I've had one meeting with one school district. I made it very clear that we have three priorities. The first are the students. We want to make sure they have a place to go to school. That's really important for all of these kids. Secondly, we want to make sure the staff is taken care of in some fashion so that they don't leave, because, frankly, right now they're nervous about their jobs, as you might understand. Third, we've said we want a program that's arts-related. And I can tell you we've had one conversation that I've been a part of, and all three of those goals would be met by that institution. Now, this will not be a close thing. We're going to open it up with public hearings, and we're going to invite other offers as well. But we're taking this seriously on those three grounds.
Okay, thank you. Perhaps I shouldn't have said getting their hands on, but you know what I mean. Thank you
for that clarification. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I look at the governance, and one of the legislative recommendations is to consider looking at, I guess, I look at anything that's set up as congressional districts is not necessarily a very good way to represent, I guess, most things. But I just wanted to know if you had any ideas about the board, the role, and maybe even the composition of the state board.
Mr. Vanderkooy.
Madam Chair, Representative, as I said, I've done a lot of this for the state, and I will continue to do it if I'm able. One concern is the size of the board, the 15. I will tell you right now we have six standing committees. I want to add two more in a task force. We literally are starting to get stretched thin. So I hope you don't reduce the size. In terms of the congressional district requirement, when I served in the arts board, that's the way it was done. We had a number of at-large people, but we also had districts to get that statewide approach. So I support that, but frankly it still comes down to the appointing authority, and they have to be willing to find good people and to make sure they fit in. And that's really what it comes down to for me.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my questions are for Mr. Vanderkooy also. In your opening remarks, you talked about now we have 15, and that they're, I can't remember your choice of words, but I got the impression that they were talented people or people that were experienced in being on board, and they were kind of diverse. But I didn't know if that was their backgrounds were in education or their backgrounds were in nonprofits or their or being on boards? And if it was it is there experience a balance of knowing how to run something, educational background, and various art backgrounds?
Mr. Vanderkooy.
Madam Chair, Representative, I could go through the qualifications of each, but I won't. I'm going to highlight two or three for you. First of all, and I'm really happy to have the chair of the Rochester School Board on serving on our board. She's a two-term member down there, and she also spent 30 years teaching violin to orchestra students in the Rochester community. She's good, and she's provided a lot of insights on education. In fact, she's very active in the Minnesota School Board Association, so we have that that education piece. We have a couple former educators, mainly arts educators, who were involved. We also have a lot of arts folks, frankly, from high-powered organizations around the Twin Cities and the state. And I'd be happy to provide the committee with the list and their biographies. But, frankly, they were all chosen to be the diverse members of the arts community and the education community as well.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my other question was about the 15, and you think 15 is a good number, and you have six committees now, and you want eight committees. Is that correct?
Mr. Vanderkooy.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. I think we need to have eight. We need to add those other two dimensions so we can take care of the arts library and also the outreach piece, which have been neglected. Right. That's how I tend to do things, to get good people to sit on those committees and then report to the board. So they'll be doing their own independent investigations, gathering information, and then reporting back over the next several months.
And Madam
Representative Murphy.
Chair, Mr. Vanderkooy, what are those six committees that you already have?
Okay, Mr. Vanderkooy. If I can remember. Madam Chair, I'm sorry, Representative. We have an appeals committee. That meets infrequently if there are concerns of students, especially in parents. We have a personnel committee, which I think will be renamed Human Resources. We have a budget and finance committee, which I currently serve on. We have a governance, or a board development committee, I'm sorry, government relations. I'm going to forget the last one. I shouldn't say oops, should I? But the point is there are six permanent committees now, and we hope to add two more.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Vanderkooy, do you think those six committees should be acting more responsibly?
Mr. Vanderkooy.
Madam Chair, Representative, when I got on the board, I was informed that the committees met infrequently. As a personal situation, I was put on the Budget and Finance Committee. Remember, my first meeting was September. We did not have a meeting of that committee until the day before our November, and we had to do it to approve the budget submission. I was upset. I was furious. But the sense was, well, the board this doesn't need to do anything because the staff is taking care of it. We don't have to worry. That attitude has changed. We now have much more oversight, and that will continue as long as I am the chair of the board.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Vanderkooy, when you started, when you raised your hand and said you were here from the Purpose Board, you said that, or I got the impression that you had an opening remark or opening statements to make, and we started right in on questions. Could you give us your opening statement?
Mr. Vanderkooy.
Madam Chair, Representative, I've already talked about most of it, but let me make a couple of other observations. As I said, the key date in my life was January 11. That's when things got really interesting with the Purpose Board. So for 2 weeks, we've been struggling with this and how to move forward. The second key date is February 9, because that's the date we have our annual meeting. And at that point, we'll elect permanent officers, including the chair and a vice chair. We'll get the committees organized, new committees started. And the third date is March 9, when we hope to have the task force report back on Crosswinds. We've got a lot to do in a very short period of time, but I have commitment from the board to do that. So that's the first part of my message. The second is we take very seriously what these folks have done with the legislative audit. Frankly, if they hadn't done it, we would have had to do it for the next 6 months. We have the roadmap we need now to see what we have to do to fix Purpose. We will do that. And I guess finally, we look to the legislature for help in this. We can't do it alone. Our budgetary concerns, obviously, are going to come before you. We know that. We'll come back and support what our requests are. But bottom line is, to make arts education real for students all across Minnesota, I think the best vehicle is Purpich. It's been around for 32 years, and I think it has a great potential if we narrow the mission and focus on what was originally planned, which was the arts high school and the outreach piece. So that's as much as I can say about my open statement.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
That gives me comfort, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Vanderkooy, just one question. I know that the executive director, who had been there for a number of years, Ms. Sue Mackert, has retired. Was there any severance payment provided to her upon her retirement?
Madam Chair, members, I don't know. Frankly, until January 11, I was shut out of information. It was a very, very tense environment, and the previous chair, who was not replaced, was not reappointed, made me the acting chair on January 11th. So I do not know those details. If you would like them, we will get them for you.
Ms. Ferkel, do you have any of that information?
Madam Chair, our audit did not extend to that, but we would have access to the information also, and if you'd like, I can get that for you.
I would appreciate that if you'd forward that to the committee. Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Vanderkooy, as I sit here and try to take in the totality of the two reports and the like, I'm struck that sometimes the challenge in organizations, whether they're public sector, private sector, nonprofit, is the personnel in the positions. And if you change the personnel, you get a different outcome. Sometimes it's the culture that is developed within the organization. You've talked quite a bit about, I think, both of those dimensions, and I guess I'll frame my question to be, what percentage of the challenges perhaps outlined in the reports is personnel, and we know that there's been some changes there, and what percentage is culture, and what is being done to respond to the culture dimension? Well, yeah, I guess both, because there may also be ongoing staff issues.
Mr. Vanderkooy.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, you know, they feed on each other. I mean, good people usually can create a good culture. And maybe I haven't talked about this, but I will now. We have a search underway for a new executive director. We think that's a critical piece, and that search process will be started also at our February 9 meeting. I will tell you that when I first became the chair, remember January 11 was the date, I was the acting chair, worried, of course, about Purpich. I received two resumes, remember, less than 24 hours after I was appointed, from very highly qualified education professionals, fully licensed PhDs from metro high schools, wanting to know if they could apply for the position. What that told me is that there still is a concern about arts education, and I think we can find qualified people if we do this right. Fortunately, among the personnel that we have added to the committee is we have the HR person from Bremer Bank in St. Paul. She will head up that effort on the search process, as will our interim executive director when that person is chosen in the next 2 weeks. So the two come together. But I think they start with getting the right leadership, and we will seriously look at that as we get these other things done.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr.
Vanderkooy.
Representative Nornes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Kind of discouraged and encouraged here today. It's been interesting. My question, I think, would be for the auditor's office. After hearing where we've been and then where we're going, is there a follow-up to this? When will we know whether we're making progress or not?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, Representative Nornes, there's no schedule for a follow-up. Obviously, we'll be back in 4 years and do another financial audit. But I think the first milestone, I think, will be Purpich leadership perhaps coming to you and letting you know what they're doing. I think that will be perhaps the best thing will be to see what their plan is for going forward. And after that point, If there's some need for us to do some follow-up, we occasionally do some ad hoc follow-up as time permits, but there's nothing scheduled at this point.
Okay. Right.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome to the committee. How many teachers do you have on staff, if you call them teachers at Purpich, and what's their average salary?
Mr. Van der Kooi.
Madam Chair, Representative, I wish I could give you that information. I just don't know. I've met with them, so I have a sense. I think this morning there were about 20 in the room when I talked. Okay. At Purpich, there were probably that same number. It wasn't the entire staff, but, you know, that's a piece of information we need to have, and we will get. If you'd like it, we'll get it for you.
Thank you. Mr. Van der Kooi, so you've been on just a short time, so probably, a couple of weeks maybe. What kind of information have you been provided? Have all of the financial books been turned over for you to be able to look at? How much information have you been provided?
Madam Chair, members, this is the good news. When I came on, I became the acting chair through a whole series of flukes, circumstances, back in September. For a month, I was acting chair. And I made a tour of state agencies, met with a number of departments, from Department of Education to Administration to the AG's office. And frankly, wherever I went, after expressions of sympathy, they thanked me for getting involved and offered their complete support. So the short answer is we have gotten extraordinary cooperation when we've asked for it, and I think the same thing will happen into the future. The staff has been good about sharing information. Tomorrow we'll dig deep on the finances. We'll have a better sense of that. So it's a learning process, but we are getting the information that we need. I want to add one more story. You heard about the finance piece and the $500,000 possible loss of funds. I want you to know what happened. I became the acting chair. I think within 24 hours again, I got an email, a copy of an email from the Department of Education. Third notice, immediate action required. I was just shocked. So I went to leadership. I said, what is going on? Oh, it's being taken care of. Don't worry about it. I said, that's not good enough for me. I don't believe in micromanaging. That's not how I think board should operate. But I said, I want to know the name of the auditor, and I want to talk to him today. I did. We followed up. The audits have been filed. That process was taken care of. That's how I operate. If things are working well, fine. The management can handle it. If not, it's important for the board to intervene. So we'll get the information we need to make sure this place is operated properly.
Thank you. With just a couple minutes, I would like to call a representative of the department down, Mr. Uni, or if there's anyone else you want to designate from the department. But I have a couple questions. Thank you, Mr. Van der Kooi.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Uni, and thanks. Just a couple of things, and obviously there was some reference to perhaps interaction between Purpich and the department a couple of times during the auditor's testimony, and I just wanted to ask you the issue, first of all, of the 2014 MCA test. I mean, was there a communication between Purpich and the department on whether or not the MCAs were optional for their students?
Madam Chair, committee members, I have not communicated with our assistant commissioner or our testing director who oversees those. As you know, parents and students can opt out of the MCAs. I am unaware of a communication with the department of that. I know that it's our policy to not encourage districts or to opt out of the test or tell their students to opt out of the test, but when they inquire, we do inform them of they're right that students are allowed to opt out of MCA tests if they so choose.
Mr. Uni, yes, students have the right to opt out, but schools do not have the right to opt out, correct?
Correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I was not serving on an education committee in the 2013-14 legislative cycle, and I'm presuming that there were, and I'm looking at Representative Erickson because I don't recall, but were there committee hearings regarding the transfer of Crosswinds to Purpich? And if there were, did the department provide any opinion or testimony on that?
Madam Chair, committee members, as some of you on the committee know, I served on staff at that time. I do remember there were hearings, several in both bodies, on the transfer of Crosswinds to the Perpich Center. I do not, off the top of my head, remember if there was any testimony from the department on that, but I can certainly go back and relay to the committee what the Department of Governor's official position was on that at the time.
Thank you. And one last question for me. You know, some of the requests for information and reports that were required to be provided to the Department of Education pertaining to Crosswinds that didn't come forward, and the department wasn't receiving those. Would that information be transmitted to the legislative committees or not necessarily?
I don't believe necessarily. I know, Madam Chair, pardon me, committee members, I know there was a question in the policy committee about whether Perpich had submitted their world's best workforce plan. We did verify that they had. I do believe they've, for at least this year in March, they have until March 15th to submit their integration and achievement plan. So I haven't tracked whether any schools have submitted those yet. If the department or if the committee would like to see a copy of any reports that we receive that are public, we can certainly provide those to the committee.
All right. Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Oney, did Mr. Melcher realize that Crosswinds, when it had been under EMED, was using the UFAR system and now there was a question? I think we need to have clarity on that if it's his department that's, I believe, would be in charge of that. But I think we need to know just what was happening there, that all of a sudden we had this lapse of reporting, because that I think that question came up earlier about, well, if they had operated as a school under EMED, then I think they would have to be submitting the same kind of financial information and cataloging it, you know, and maybe that's why the special ed showed up. I'm not sure it is the reason, but you know, could you track that for us so we know during that transition time? Did something break down or what?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, obviously I can't speak to what Dr. Melcher and his shop were thinking about in terms of how they were receiving the information and how it changed from when Crosswinds was under EMID during the transfer period and currently under Perpich. I can certainly go back and get some documentation of communications that we had, which should delve into the collection of the UFARS data, especially as it pertains to special education. I have briefly seen some of the communications and seen some of the historical communications with Perpich staff in terms of acquiring that information, but I can go back and get a detailed report from Dr. Melcher and his staff to provide you with the insight that I think you're looking for.
And, Madam Chair, one last question.
Representative Erickson.
And was there not a management company in charge during the transition? They would have to be included too, right?
Mr. Rooney.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, unfortunately, I don't know that specifically. If there was, obviously, we would include that information.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we are past time, so with that, we'll have to call the committee a day for the committee. But thank you, members, and committee is adjourned.